Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome back to our episode of the Extra Movie Butter Podcast. Yes, it's a lot of words in order, but it is the name of our podcast. We stand by it. Benny, welcome back, buddy. We are without our main man, Moose, today. He is in another part of the world. Who knows where in the world is Moose? You're lucky. Your guess is as good as mine. He's Antarctica, you know, somewhere in the Bahamas. Who knows? Maybe both in one trip. Benny, but you're here. How's it going, buddy?
It's going great. If you want to find Moose, just check the newspapers for a dead dictator, and that's probably where he's at.
That's right. Our theory that he is a CIA agent continues, and I cannot wait to see what excuse he has when he comes back. But this week, we cannot do the show with just me and Benny. We have done that in the past, but we're listening to your letters, and there's too much 80s talk, too much Stallone, Arnold, Van Damme. So we're going to actually bring in somebody to actually co-host with us this week, who's also our guest for our main review, which is Challengers, the one and only Paige Robredi. What's up, Paige?
Oh, you know, so swell. I missed you boys, so I'm so happy to be back. And I feel like I am the Zendaya right now to you boys. I'm taking care of my white boys, so I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm not very good at tennis. Benny, what is our game of choice here? Bowling? What do you think?
Let's go with marbles. There's less activity.
Marbles? I don't think I've ever played marbles. Like, growing up, I never played dominoes.
How about Pogs?
I did play Pogs.
We can play Pogs.
All right, I'll have to find some Alf Pogs online and get ready and do a little practice. I'm actually really good at, I think I mentioned this in a previous episode, cornhole. I joined a cornhole league in L.A., and my team came in first place. We won the championship. So maybe cornhole would be good. Not a lot of moving, just some underhand throws.
See, I bring out the dedication to you guys. So,
Benny, are you good at cornhole?
Being from the Midwest, I've never played. Actually, it's really popular here, but I've never played it.
I was going to say, the Midwest is like, I think it was born there.
Yeah, it is.
It's definitely invented there. It's called, well, it has the word corn in it, and there's a lot of corn that grows in the Midwest. So,
I would love to read the story of how cornhole was created, like who thought of it. There's got to be a story there. I have no idea what it is. But anyway, this is going to be a fun show. We're going to start off, as usual, with box office and movie news. Go into our extra butter segment, which we're going to talk favorite films with a love triangle in honor of the film Challengers. Then we'll end with our review with Challengers. I think we're going to have I can't wait to hear what everyone's opinion on that movie is, because I feel like I'm going to fall maybe in the middle of you two, but that's just me guessing. We'll see when we come down to it. All right, guys, let's go ahead and get into the box office, and we'll get your thoughts. Let me pull it up here. Here we go. Top 10. At number 10, Boy Kills World, a movie that only made $1.6 million and was a huge flop. Apparently, this movie, I don't know how much it costs, but if you're bringing in $1.6 million on your opening weekend, not good. Number 9 is Dune Part 2 with $2 million. The movie has made $279 million just in the U.S., so that's kicking ass. Frozen Empire, Ghostbusters came in at number 8 with $3.2 with $107 million. So it did pass the $100 million mark, but this movie cost $80 million. I believe much more than the last film. So not great. Not a good movie. Number 6, Kung Fu Panda with $3.5 million. Has made $185 in the U.S. Panda's back and kicking ass, as usual. Number 6 is The Ministry of Gentlemanly Warfare. I am looking at the wrong... Okay, I'm sorry, guys. I apologize. 10, Boy Kills World. 9, Dune Part 2. 8, Ghostbusters. 7, Kung Fu Panda. And number 6 is The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. I was reading what they were at last week, I believe. Number 6, Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, which we reviewed on this very podcast last week, came with $3.8 million. Number 5, Abigail, with $5.2 million, down 49%. That's a pretty big drop, but it is a genre film. Number 4, we have Civil War with $7 million. Pretty good. Still holding on strong. Probably the IMAX screens are helping that a lot. Mm-hmm. At number 3, Godzilla vs. Kong, still kicking ass. $7.2 million, $181 million domestic so far. That franchise is going strong. Godzilla and Kong, they will be back for another movie, guaranteed. Number 2, Unsung Hero with $7.7 million. I've heard of this movie. Paige, you know what this movie is about? Unsung Hero?
No, I'm guessing it's got to be one of those damn Christian-based films is my assumption, because somehow they kill it at the fucking box office. And you're right, I'm sorry if I can't swear.
No, but you can. Based on a remarkable true story, a mom's faith stands against all odds, inspires her husband and children to hold on to theirs. Yeah, I think that's...
It's a
faith-based movie. It's a faith-based movie, 100%. Yep. The opposite of a faith-based movie, Challengers, was number 1 with $15 million. Not a, a decent opening for a small R-rated drama. Mm-hmm. I think Zendaya is definitely dragging, you know, butts to seats for this one. So that's it, guys. That's the top 10. So let's hear what you guys think overall. I'll start with you, Benny. What did you take away from this week's box office report?
Well, you would think that that would be a good box office for a small film, but budget-wise, this isn't a small film.
How much did it cost?
$55 million, not counting marketing.
Wow.
Zendaya must have pocketed like 20 of that.
She may have. So, like, these movies, a lot of times, these rom-coms, they have, like, good legs, so I think there's still hope for the movie.
Rom-com. But, like, I'll debate if it's a rom-com, but I see what
you're saying. Romance genre female leaning films, they tend to have longer legs. So if it does, I mean, it'll make its money back. But if it drops off a cliff next week, it's going to lose money because on its budget, it's not a great opening. And for the faith-based movie, man, I think that's the future of movie marketing, because you see it with faith-based movies, you see it with Hindi language movies. And you see it with like low budget horror movies, like where they're marketing specifically to a specific audience, you know, at a lower budget. Like as the population gets more diverse and you can't just have mass marketing anymore, like that kind of marketing strategy is where we're eventually going to go. I firmly believe that, man. So whether or not you care for faith-based movies, they need to be checking out the marketing strategy that these cats are using. Because that's how you're going to end up marketing these other things. And I don't care if the Boy Kills World thing didn't make any money. Like, I'm curious to see it. Like, I appreciated the trailer for it. So I'm curious to see it, even though no one else apparently is. But those are really my primary takeaways this week.
Yeah, not a good look for The Crow, starring the same lead actor, Skarsgård. He's going to be doing The Crow. I believe it comes out in, like, June, maybe? So not a great, you know, signal for that film. He's not much of a box office draw. That movie didn't really have any stars. It's just going on a very R-rated, over-the-top premise. I definitely saw some trailers for it this past weekend while I was watching, like, NFL or NBA, NFL draft and NBA basketball. I saw a trailer here and there, but obviously it didn't have a huge budget to do a lot of advertising. So I think maybe it's a movie that will find its audience streaming somewhere one day. Like, it'll be in Netflix top 10 within like a year, probably. Paige, what's your overall thoughts on the box office? Did anything stand out to you?
I mean, yeah, definitely. I mean, the fact that Civil War still has legs, because for me, it's such a heavy movie that I wouldn't picture it to be having a lot of like repeat viewings. But I think seeing it like in IMAX and seeing it on the biggest like screen, I think does impact the viewing a lot. I mean, see that sound, like that score and that sound is so haunting that like people, I think people are wanting to go back to be like, yo, we got to go see this. Like, I got to show you this movie. So I think that's actually what's kind of helping it is word of mouth. Yeah. Boy Kills World, whatever it's called, Boy Meets World, Boy Kills World, whatever it's called. I am surprised because it has such that John Wick flavor. And since we're not getting like a John Wick film this year, because we were supposed to get Ballerina, but that got moved to next year, that you'd think that it would at least do better because it has that same fighting style. And for some reason, fighting action movies have been doing, like assassin films have been doing pretty well lately. And the fact that this one didn't, I don't know if it's because of like the no real star power or that voiceover work and its gimmick just did not work for a lot of people. So they were just like, screw this. But I mean, we got to talk about challenges, man. I mean, we'll talk about it later, but I think that movie is going to have legs. And I'm actually surprised that its budget was that high.
A lot of effects or anything in this movie. It's had, for me, I'm just hearing that and I'm like, I had to go to the director who's, you know, pretty well respected director. And Zendaya, what's her paycheck these days? Is she like $20 million a movie no matter what?
Well, her, and then you also got to think of who scored the movie. Those are some expensive composers.
Yeah, Trent Reznor, yeah.
Yep. So, Yeah, I really don't know where all the budget went for this movie, but it's a great commercial art house film that I think if you love art house, you'll go see this movie. And it looks the way it's commercialized to like a regular movie going person. I think it will interest them, especially someone younger. I think people are going to be like, ooh, Zendaya, this looks sexy. So let's go check it out. Like,
interesting. It does have a pretty good footprint on social media. Like, I've seen TikToks, I've seen it on Twitter. Mm-hmm. People are definitely talking about it. There's a little bit of buzz around it. So I am curious to see how that second weekend holds up. Unfortunately, you have The Fall Guy, which is a big Ryan Gosling. It's supposed to be kind of the beginning of the summer movie season, honestly, is The Fall Guy. Yeah. So is it going to fall and just kind of get buried after Fall Guy comes out? Because that's also a romantic action comedy. Again, this was a romantic comedy, but it was about a triangle love story. As our local, horror fan, what do you think about Abigail falling 50%? Now, it's made about $18 million so far. It is a lower budget film from the Radio Silence, the guys who did Ready or Not in the last two Scream films. Mm. What do you think about his box office life after this fall?
I was actually going to mention that. Yeah, man, people, if you want to see original fun horror movies, go to the theaters and see these so we can keep getting them. So we don't have to keep repeating and remaking all of these horror movies we've seen a million times. Like, this movie has such a fun take. I think what really hurt it, though, was its marketing campaign, is that the trailer came out so early and pretty much told us the premise. If you've seen the trailer, you've pretty much seen the movie, but it doesn't take away from the fact of how much fun and entertaining it is. It's a very ensemble film, so I highly recommend it. Everyone, go see this movie, because it's really sad that it's not doing well at the box office, considering I'm pretty sure Ready or Not and the last two Scream movies did a killing at the office. So
yeah, I mean, they had IP yeah, though.
That is true. But Ready or Not, though, I think did well. I don't remember its box office when it first came out in like 2019. But come on, guys, if you want original horror concepts, you gotta go to the theater. So everyone, please go see it, because it is a fun time.
Let me ask you, Paige, out of those first four films, Ready or Not, the two Screams, and this film, what's your favorite of theirs so far?
Of Radio Silence, it's definitely Ready or Not. I'm not the biggest Scream. The original Scream is my favorite movie of all time. I remember
talking about this.
Yes, it's my favorite movie of all time. So, and I love Scream 1 and 4 a lot. All the other ones are okay. Like 5 and 6 are okay. I liked 6 a lot better than I did 5. But for me, it's definitely, personally, it's probably Ready or Not, Scream 6, Abigail, and then Scream 5. But I think they do a great job with the films that they've done thus far.
Yeah, I've liked their two films where they weren't tied to Scream. Like, I think they're better when they're able to be completely free to do whatever crazy idea they have, which so far all happens in one house. Both their films basically take place at these mansions. Mm-hmm. I think maybe it's just a way to keep the budget down. Benny, you saw Abigail last week, right? Were you pretty favorable for it?
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. I think one thing that killed them is revealing in the trailer that the little girl is the monster, because then there was no buzz about it. Like, afterwards, like, people will go see it and be, oh, that's a fun time. But then that's it. You know, they're not talking about it. But had you gone in thinking that it was some, you know, otherworldly demon, and then you found out that the little ballerina vampire, people would have just been raving about that all over social media. And so I really think, even though I liked the trailers, I think it killed the momentum of the movie.
Agree. Yeah. So box office next week will be very interesting. Like I said, The Fall Guy is coming out. It is the beginning of the summer movie season. Because of the strike last year, it is a little bit of a lighter season than we had last year. But I'm always curious to see what's going to turn out to be the big hit of the summer. I think Deadpool Wolverine is probably where I bet my money. I think that's probably going to be the biggest hit of the summer. But Despicable Me 4, don't underestimate Despicable Me. That movie could just kill. And we're actually going to talk a little more about summer movies, because we're going to start doing some movie news. And a new trailer came out today from Mufasa, directed by Barry Jenkins. I did not like the first Lion King movie, only because it is what all these Disney movies have been. Just remake with new animation. They, you know, it's just an updated version. They changed some things here. They changed some songs. But it just doesn't have the charm and the same comedy and wit of the original. It feels like a cover band of a much better movie. Now, the good thing about Mufasa is this is something original. It's actually something new. Now, there were sequels to The Lion King, but I don't think this has anything to do with those. Those were straight to like VHS sequels. Disney had this whole thing where they came out like Pocahontas 2 and Hercules 3. Like, they would just do these like half-ass sequels and throw them on home video. But Mufasa is a original film, a sequel slash prequel. It is a prequel. It shows like how Mufasa became the king. I watched the trailer this morning. It is a teaser trailer. It looks beautiful. The last film looked beautiful, obviously. Bob, can't wait to hear your guys' thoughts. Paige, let's start with you. What did you think of Mufasa, directed by Barry Jenkins?
I think the only reason why I'm going to see this movie is because it's directed by Barry Jenkins. I mean, he's an Oscar-worthy director. But, like, in the same time, I'm like, the live action, I'm not... It isn't live action, but you guys know what I mean. Like the remake,
they're trying to make it look live action. Yes,
yeah, exactly. It's CGI, but it is a shot for shot of the original movie. So I am looking forward to that. We are getting like an original concept with this, and it must have intrigued Oscar winner Barry Jenkins to be like, "All right, I want to do this." Like. He must have found something within the story that was worth telling. So I am curious with it. I mean, it looks to me personally, it looks exactly like the Lion King that we just got. I think it was 2019 as well that came out. So, yeah, I mean, we got Blue Ivy in here, guys. We got Beyonce's daughter coming in here doing some voice.
Ah, nepotism. That's what you need, a little nepotism in my Disney exactly. movies.
Right. I mean, it makes sense because Simba is a nepo baby of Mufasa. So,
good point, Benny. What were your thoughts on this trailer, bud?
I was in high school when the original Lion King came out, so I was not the target audience for it, and so I have no nostalgic connection to the Lion King in any way. And had you taken out the Rikiki? I can't even.
Sure.
Rikishi. Had you taken out the voiceover and just said that this is like the National Geographic's next special on lions, you know, I'd have been like, oh, that's an interesting nature documentary. I'd like to watch that.
It's Rafiki.
Thank you, Rafiki. So, I mean, the trailer doesn't really do anything except show a lion running and then have a voiceover. So the lion running looked nice. The voiceover was fine. But as far as like excitement about the movie, like, you know, if people tell me it's great, or if you tell me I have to see it for this podcast, I'll go watch it. But I'm not like, yes, more Lion King content. Finally.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you guys. I said in the beginning, if this was just another remake of another Disney movie, I would just be like, oh, another one. The fact that Barry Jenkins was given, you know, some freedom to kind of create a story and characters, and it's not tied to being like a shot for shot remake of a more beloved previous film, it gives me a little more hope. But does it mean I'm excited to see it? No. Am I like, can't wait to see this? Will we review it? Maybe. What else is coming out that weekend? We'll find out. It's not something I'm like going to rush to go see.
I hope he does a shot for shot remake of Moonlight just with lines.
That would be awesome.
I have a question for you guys. Do you guys think this one will make $1 billion like the other one did?
I don't know. How did Little Mermaid do? I think Little Mermaid did good, but not as good as I think Disney was hoping.
It legged out forever, and it got up around 700 million by the time.
Oh, did it really? Wow.
I think so.
I don't think it's going to hit a billion. I think there is some fatigue with these remakes, and at least the last one had the music that you knew. You knew what you were getting. Mm-hmm. I think some people here will just be like, oh, this is a sequel. I don't really need a sequel. I don't know. We'll see. Like, I think to us who are film geeks, Barry Jenkins directing is a huge deal. Middle America doesn't give a damn. Probably doesn't know who he is. They just want to go see a Lion King movie. But if the reviews are great and it gets great word of mouth, then yeah, I would definitely go out and see it. Because if I hear something's great, I want to witness it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
As the lone representative of Middle America, we know who Barry Jenkins is. We just don't care.
It's also going against Sonic 3, I believe.
Sonic the Hedgehog. Shit. Let's get buried. I don't know. That's an interesting matchup. I'll go see the one with Jim Carrey probably, but anyway. All right, let's move on to some more movie news here. Let's go ahead and talk about Jeff Bridges returning for Tron: Ares, the third film of the Tron franchise, which I never thought Tron would be a franchise to begin with. The original film is something from the 80s, or was it 70s? I think it was early 80s. Benny, help me out here.
It's very, very early 80s.
Thank you. Very early 80s. I didn't love the original Tron growing up. I mean, I definitely saw it, and I saw it, you know, on Disney Channel when I was older. But it wasn't something that I had, like, a huge love for. I do really enjoy the sequel. I think it's got problems. I think the third act kind of falls apart. But the first hour and the visuals, and that I think is when my crush on Olivia Wilde started. It was in that movie. It was like, who is she? You know, Daft Punk doing the score. I have a projector and I have a 3D Blu-ray, and I sometimes just love putting my 3D glasses on at home and watching Tron Legacy in 3D on my projector because it's a visual feast. I remember it's one of the few films I actually took my mom to go see in the 3D. I think it was the first time she saw a 3D movie, and she was like super impressed. And people are always like, oh, I wish some movies would come back to theaters. I would love for Tron Legacy to get a re-release in IMAX with 3D. Because to me, that is the best and really only way to watch the movie. Can you enjoy it without 3D? Of course. But it was made for that. It was made for the big screen. It was made for the visuals and the sound. So it's just another movie like that I talked about a couple weeks ago was Pacific Rim. I like Pacific Rim. I like watching it at home. But watching it in IMAX 3D, just it's another level. Jeff Bridges is coming back. He even said in an interview that he thought his effects, the de-aging on him, looked pretty bad. And it looks horrible. You go back and watch that movie now. It's awful. It is like PlayStation 3 graphics bad. Jeff Bridges says he's hoping with technology being more up to date that he will be able to look a little bit better if he is de-aged in this movie. He didn't say whether he would or wouldn't, but I imagine he would if it's going to be a sequel. I'll start with you, Paige. Are you excited for this new Tron film? What's your thoughts on the first two Tron movies?
Yeah, so the original one is definitely dated. I am with the. I fall under the category of you liking Tron Legacy a lot. I really actually enjoy Tron Legacy quite a bit. I think that's when my crush for Olivia Wilde developed as well, because she is a beauty. That movie is like the graphics still hold up besides the de-aging on his face. But I mean, Jeff Bridges is the man. He's the dude. So it is kind of cool to see him coming back into this. We got Jared Leto as the lead, though, so I'm wondering how this will play out. But I mean, I'm excited because I really do like Tron Legacy, and I think that movie should have gotten a sequel like way sooner. So I know it's not coming back with I forget the other guy's name in it that plays Jeff Bridges' son in it. His name is Charlie.
It's not Hunnam, right?
His name might not be Charlie, but I thought it was. But it doesn't matter, guys, because he's not even in the movie. But yeah, I mean, am I going to see this movie? Yeah, because I really like Tron Legacy, and I'm just curious because this movie's all about effects and being visually like really cool and like adventurous. So I'm really curious to see what they'll do with that and like techno-y.
Yeah, and the lead was Garrett Hedlund, who was in Triple Frontier, a couple other films. Benny, what is your relationship to the Tron franchise? Did you like Legacy? Are you an OG Tron fan, and are you excited for this one?
You know, I never watched the original Tron until like 3 or 4 years ago, and I actually really enjoy it, mostly because it's so dated, and like the view of computers, and watching old movies that are about technology, I find fascinating. And so I enjoy the movie a lot on that level. Like the more recent Tron, it's fine. It's not like something I go and revisit. And I think it'll be interesting to see a sequel to it because it'll be fun. I think it will absolutely bomb at the box office and is going to lose Disney a lot of money. But that's neither here nor there. I'd be interested to see it.
Yeah, the director of the original, not the original, but the Tron Legacy was the same guy who did Top Gun Maverick. Mm-hmm. Joseph Kaczynski, I believe his name is. And he's a great visual director. He did another film with Tom Cruise called Oblivion, which even if it's not a great movie, visually, it's fantastic. The director of this film, not a great track record. I think he did the fifth Pirates film, along with Javier Bardem. He did a foreign film called Kon-Tiki, which he was nominated for Best Foreign Film. And I saw it, and I didn't think it was that great. And yeah, I think he did Maleficent 2. So not the best track record. All those movies are pretty visually well done. So maybe that's why he got the job. But is the story going to live up to the visuals is what I'm wondering. Because Tron Legacy, I said like Paige, I really enjoy it. The story didn't quite live up to the visuals. And I'm afraid that might be the case here. But as long as the visual is strong enough and I can enjoy it just for that aspect, I guess I'll fall in line with the last Tron movie. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's it. Tron Ares coming out next summer. So we'll be talking about that again next year, hopefully reviewing it on this very podcast. Last bit of movie news we're going to talk about is the sequel to 28 Days Later, 28 Weeks Later. You would think it would be called 28 Months Later, but no, they're skipping the 28 years later. They just announced the cast, and this cast is pretty phenomenal, in my opinion. You got Aaron Taylor Johnson, who's, you know, a.k.a. maybe Mr. Bond. You got Jodie Comer, who I feel like hasn't been in a movie in a while because of the Bike Riders was pushed back to this summer. Mm-hmm. That's finally coming out next month. And then you got Ralph Fiennes, who's, you know, one of the great, great actors. The last film he did, The Menu, was amazing. And he is amazing in that movie. So Danny Boyle coming back to direct this sequel. They didn't say anything about Cillian Murphy, but I feel like he was attached to it when they first announced it.
Rumor has it, I think, that he's going to be in the second and third because it's going to be a trilogy, supposedly. Right.
So I find weird.
Yeah, I think that's what they want to do. They want to be like, well, you got to get butts in seats for the first one. And if you do, we'll give you that special treat in the second and third.
Interesting. I actually really like 28 Weeks Later also. I think that's one of the first films where I was like, oh, Jeremy Renner is pretty awesome in this movie. Mm-hmm. And I think that's Rose Byrne is also in that film. Great opening. The opening scene in 28 Weeks Later is one of my favorite openings for a horror film. It's phenomenal. If you don't like the movie, if you haven't seen it, just watch the first 5 to 10 minutes. And if you aren't hooked, I don't know what else to tell you. But Benny, I'm going to start with you. Are you a fan of the 28 Days Later, Weeks, Months franchise? And are you excited for the sequel?
I love 28 Days Later. I remember being totally surprised by that movie when I saw it in the theater. Like, I went and watched it, and it was like on a Sunday. And, you know, this is however many years ago now, but I still remember this. Going to like a matinee on a Sunday and watching that movie and just being totally blown away by it. You know, it was the first fast zombie movie. And the opening of that movie, like when he wakes up in the hospital, is just like that whole scene where he goes home after he wakes up in the hospital. Like, it's been done to death now after like The Walking Dead and, you know, the zombie revolution that happened. But man, I love that movie. Like 28 Weeks Later, it's a good movie, but it's more of like an action movie as opposed to a horror movie, which I felt like the first one was. So I would say I enjoy the first one more, but I think they're both really fun movies.
Yeah, and this, and you could say Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead is what reintroduced fast zombies. And before this, zombies were always slow. I want to eat your brains, moaning. And because they're not exactly zombies, they're infected. There are different versions of zombies, but they come at you with just pure ferocity. It was pretty much a huge game changer for the genre, in my opinion. Paige, what's your relationship to this franchise? And are you excited for this one and this cast?
So actually the first time I think I ever saw, I think the first time I ever watched these films was in college freshman year. I took a zombie class. Literally, it was a zombie course. And we literally just watch zombie movies and then would just write a paper like analyzing them. I was like, this is pretty fucking awesome. And I'm not going to lie, I don't think I did that well in the class because I don't think I...
What?
I don't... You know, freshman year college, you just don't pay attention. You show up to class the first time and then leave. Because some of the movies were... But yeah, no, I remember watching these both of these films. I really do like 28 Days Later a lot. Kind of like what Benny said, it is more of the horror element, while 28 Weeks Later is more, seems like more of like an action film. It's kind of like Alien and Aliens. Like the first one is horror driven and the second one is more of like an action driven film. But yeah, I'm curious to see this because, I mean, Danny Boyle, I think, is a very underrated director. So I'm curious to see like what we're going to get with this. Yeah, I don't get why it's called 28 Years Later, because what are you going to call the trilogy? Unless it's 28 years later, then 29 years later, and then 30. I'm curious how this is going to work out.
I mean, it makes some sense that they called it 28 years, because at least 28 days and 28 weeks were not that far apart.
Yeah.
It's been a long time since 28 weeks.
So by the time this comes out, it could be 28 years. Who knows?
So, the trilogy thing is really, I hope Danny Boyle's just going in, let's just make a standalone really good film. And if it's a success, then I could do a trilogy. I hope they're not, all their eggs are in the basket for a trilogy. I just think, you know, make a really good film. You have two movies before this, make a nice closing chapter, but leave the, maybe not the door, but the window open for a possible sequel. And if it works out and everyone loves this new one, Then you can continue the story. Listen, Walking Dead has like three different shows that branched off. 28 Days could do it also. So overall, I think we're all pretty positive about this. I mean, anything about the cast stick out to you? Aaron Taylor Johnson, Ralph Fiennes, Jodie Comer?
I mean, yeah, that's a stacked cast right there. I mean, I love I think Jodie Comer, definitely an underrated actress. I always forget that she is like young. For some reason, when I look at her, I think she's like a 35 veteran actress, and she's only like 29, 30 years old. So she's like got a lot like to still prove in this industry. And I think her being in this film, I think will definitely like prove her right. Because I mean, her biggest thing I think is Killing Eve. And so she can obviously kind of do action. So I'm curious to see what she can do with zombies in the mix. And Aaron Taylor Johnson, for some reason I was like blanking on his name for a hot second. Yeah, I mean, Mr. Craven, man, he's gonna be running around barefoot from zombies in this one. So I'm very looking forward to this. And I'm wondering like what the dynamic between the three characters are gonna be, because like Ralph Fiennes is all obviously much older than them too and is like a seasoned actor. So I'm wondering, is he gonna be like a mad scientist, like
a general maybe?
He's a general.
Benny, is anything about this cast stand out to you? I think Ralph Fiennes, obviously an amazing actor, but Jodie Comer, I feel like, is a little underrated. I mean, I know Killing Eve was a hit. A lot of people didn't see The Last Duel, and I thought she was fantastic in that movie. Mm-hmm. What about the cast sticks out to you? Are you excited about this cast?
It's a good cast. Like, Aaron Taylor Johnson, I like him, but he's a lot like Michael Fassbender, where he's a really good actor, but he just picks really shitty movies to be in, like, consistently. So I hope this one breaks the streak for him. I hope Craven breaks the streak for him. But, you know, he's one of those actors that I enjoy seeing, but he's never, ever in a good movie.
Interesting. I thought he was the highlight of Bullet Train, which is a movie mm-hmm. I enjoyed but didn't love.
Yeah, him and Brian Tyree Henry, I enjoyed in it, but yeah. That was about it.
Yeah, so I think he's a really good actor. He did a film called The Wall with John Cena, who is kind of like their two military officers. The whole movie takes place in one location in a desert, and he's basically trapped by a sniper. I think it was directed by Doug Liman, you know, the guy who did Edge of Tomorrow and a lot of great films. And it was a smaller budget film for him, but Aaron Taylor Johnson, it's a one-man show for most of the film. But John Cena is there, but he's not there in it nowhere near as much as it's an Aaron Taylor Johnson kind of tour de force. So I would just want to put that out there, because if you guys out there are listening and you haven't seen The Wall, directed by Doug Liman, check it out. I think Aaron Taylor Johnson carries that movie beautifully. Have you guys seen that, The Wall?
I have not, but you should check out the movie. I think it's called like 1 Million Pieces, or I think it's called 1 Million Pieces.
Okay.
And it's Aaron Taylor Johnson. And I'm pretty sure his wife, I forget her first name off the top of my head, but she directed it, and he's kind of just like a drug addict in rehab. So I don't know. I kind of like the way he looks in the movie just reminds me of Cillian Murphy in 28 Days Later. So I can very much see like them playing off each other really well. But yeah, I think he really does have like the dramatic chops. I just think he hasn't been able to really show them that much. So yeah, I'm curious. I mean, he's going to be in The Fall Guy
next week. Yeah, I'm excited.
Like, I don't think it's a huge role, but I think when he does like these smaller roles, like he does it well. So I'm very curious to see what he can do.
Benny, you're a big John Cena fan. Have you seen The Wall?
I have not seen The Wall, but after his Oscar snub for that movie I loved last year.
What's it called? Because I can't remember.
I'm blanking on it right now. I don't care. I love that movie anyway.
Is that what John Cena?
Yeah.
John Cena and Alison Brie last year.
Oh, my God. It's called, like, Freelance, I think.
Yes.
That's the name of it. I love that movie. I don't care what anyone says.
Was it your number one movie last year?
It was, like, number two or three. I love that movie for some reason. I don't care.
And you can't remember the title. I love it. All right, well, I'm going to let Benny stew in that for a little bit. Guys, thanks so much for listening. We're coming right back to you. We're going to do a quick break. When we come back, we're going to discuss our favorite films with a love triangle. Ooh, it's going to get spicy. Be back in a few.
Kevin Flynn was reported missing today. He was last seen with his son, Sam.
Sam, I was paged last night. Came from your dad's office. Your number's been disconnected for 20 years.
Where am I?
Sam, Dad.
We have to get you out of here.
It's not that easy, Sam.
Here they come.
without you. You've drawn legacy.
In the blink of an eye, the world he knew was gone. See the only movie this summer that's a stunningly scary hit, striking and original.
They're infected with what?
A genre-busting vision.
He's the blood. There's something in the blood.
And it's scary as hell.
Hey, did you hear that?
You know what?
28 days later, rated R. Starts Friday, June 27th.
From Walt Disney Pictures, the Lion King has been robbed of his throne.
Are you nuts?
And now he's lost in the jungle, where the only law of nature is eat.
Ooh, the little cream filled kind.
Or be eaten.
Make mine a cub sandwich.
And the only way to survive.
Hey, I got it.
Is to make friends with the biggest guys on the block.
Hey, call me Mr. Pig.
Only in theaters, the Lion King, rated G.
Carnivores.
Starts Friday, June 24th.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Extra Movie Bar Podcast. We're in segment two, where we put a little extra butter on that popcorn, where we come up with our own opinions about something that's related to whatever movie we're seeing this week. And with Challengers, it's really about love triangles. So we're going to talk about some of our favorite films that are feature some sort of love triangle. I am not the biggest romantic comedy, romantic movie guy, so my picks might be a little outside the box, but I'm hoping our guests can bring a little bit more class to this episode, because I can't wait to tell you what I have picked. I'll start with you, Benny. I can't wait to hear, what is one of your favorite films that features a love triangle in, you know, honor of Challengers?
So I'm actually going to go with a teen comedy from 2001 called Get Over It. It stars
Get Over It.
It stars Ben Foster and Kirsten Dunst. And so it, you know, like if you remember 10 Things I Hate About You, which is kind of the big great teen rom-com of that era, I think it's a better movie than that. And it came out in the like a similar time frame, I think like maybe 2 years later. But anyway, you had Ben Foster, who's an amazing actor, and this is him when he's very young. And Kirsten Dunst, who I enjoy, you know, and this was like at her teen peak. But it's like a... It's very much like 10 Things I Hate About You, but it has like a very different sense of humor that I appreciate. It's a little darker and a little weirder. And I have always found it just to be such a fun movie. And strangely enough, it reminds me of Porky's too, which is probably why I love it so much. It's about these kids trying to put on a version of A Midsummer Night Dream. This guy's going into the play to try to get back with his ex-girlfriend who's fallen in love with this guy who's from a boy band, which, you know, that was the peak of boy bands. But anyway, if you like teen comedies, especially from that period, I think it's the best one. And it's still a really fun movie, and I'm going to watch it tonight because I've been thinking about it all day.
I think I've heard of it, but it is ringing zero bells for me. Paige, have you heard of this movie?
I feel like I haven't, and now I feel like I want to see, because you said Kirsten Dunst in it, right?
Kirsten Dunst is the female lead. Ben Foster is the male lead.
Yeah, I feel like I would dig this, so I definitely need to check this out.
Mila Kunis is the second female lead, and the rapper Cisco is like the second male lead. And he's actually really good in it, which is surprising.
Oh, my God. I mean, this sounds like a product of 2001 for sure.
With it Cisco, is, but it's I didn't hilarious. Know
Cisco. I didn't either.
He wasn't bad. He actually
made this movie up, guys.
No, I am serious. It's a great movie.
Well, you know what? Benny always comes with a surprise. I'm usually when he says an obscure film, I'm pretty much lock and key with him. So even this one's above over my head. Paige, what do you got for us? Because hopefully I heard of it.
All right, guys. So I have a bunch of different picks. I'll get this one out of
the first one. Yeah.
All right. I'll get this one out of the way first. And don't laugh at me. But fucking Pearl Harbor, baby.
I hate you, Paige. This was my first choice also.
That is awesome. I'm glad I'm not the only one.
I was literally gonna tease it as I was talking about Titanic. I was gonna be like, here's a love story around a great historical event that was a disaster. I was gonna rewind you down this road to make you think I was talking about Titanic, and I was gonna pivot to Pearl Harbor. Go ahead. Tell me why you love Pearl Harbor.
At least it has Josh Hartnett.
Yeah, exactly. We got Josh Hartnett. We got Ben Affleck. Kate Beckinsale. Like, this is a very attractive cast, one and two. And yeah, and this with the background of the war, World War II, and explosions and people dying, we just have this beautiful, fucked up love story between these three people. Like, what's not more to want? Because you know, at the end of the day, I bet you the three of them could have fit on a fucking door floating in the ocean. So.
I got to tell you, I remember being in the theater in this movie, and I'm going to spoil Pearl Harbor because there's no reason I can't spoil that movie. When Affleck, you know, supposedly dies, and he starts dating Josh Hartnett, and then there's a scene where Affleck comes back, and he's on the bench with her, and then Hartnett comes, and there's that realization moment where Affleck realizes that they are together. I just remember the audience being like, oh, like everyone's just like, oh, the girls in the crowd were like, oh my god, it was just hysterical. Watching it back in 2001, it wasn't funny because people were just taking it in. You watch it now and it just feels like such a soap opera. It's, you know, Michael Bay is not subtle in any way possible. I mean, some of the shots in here with Kate Beckinsale on the rocks in Hawaii and the waters come, the waves are crashing behind her, but at the same time, the movie's really messed up because she ends up with Affleck, then ends up with Hartnett. Hartnett dies. Now she's with Affleck. And then they name their kid after Hartnett. What the hell?
It's Hartnett's kid, I think, isn't it? Like,
it's Hartnett's kid. And then they named it after Josh Hartnett. Oh, my God. So he's raising his best friend's kid with his ex-lover who was stolen because they thought he was dead. It's just a mess. And the backdrop is Pearl Harbor, obviously.
Yeah.
It's one of the biggest, you know, attacks on U.S. soil ever. Benny, any thoughts on Pearl Harbor?
There are some really cool looking scenes for their time, especially of the attack. So I would say those scenes are worth watching half of the movie. Once those scenes are over, you know, depending on your taste, I guess.
I think it's fun to watch knowing, as long as you know what you're getting into. You're getting a World War II Michael Bay movie.
It's a love triangle movie, let's be honest.
He literally was like, how did they do Titanic? Let's do our version, but with Pearl Harbor. And it's ridiculous, and it's not good, but it's enjoyable is what I would say. All right, well, Paige stole my first pick.
Sorry.
So that's okay. I'm going to go with a film that I think in the 90s was very controversial, not so much so because of the content, but just because of the scenario. I feel like it might have started a lot of fights with married couples and like just couples period. I'm talking about Indecent Proposal starring Woody Harrelson, Demi Moore, and Robert Redford. Have you guys seen Indecent Proposal?
I have not. I've been meaning to actually watch that. I have obviously heard of it, but I've not seen it. How about you, Benny?
I saw it many, many years ago on home video, but I have not seen it at the most recent, like the early 2000s.
Wow. Well, it's still a really well-directed film. It's a great premise. Robert Redford offers Woody Harrelson $1 million if he could have one weekend with his wife, who's played by Demi Moore. And you know, they come to the realization, like, how can we say no to that money? It's life-changing money. And then she goes off with Robert Redford for the weekend, and Woody Harrelson is just going through it because you just sent your wife with Robert Redford, a billionaire. And the movie really just explores, like, it's not a comedic movie. It's a very serious, like, relationship drama and, like, what something like that means to a couple in the relationship before and after. There's a much funnier version of that with a movie with Nicolas Cage called Honeymoon in Vegas. James Caan plays the Robert Redford role, and Sarah Jessica Parker plays the wife. If you want the comedic version, go watch the Nicolas Cage movie Honeymoon in Vegas. If you want, you know, the steamy, sexy, you know, drama, go with Indecent Proposal. So that's my pick. Benny, next one's up to you.
You can also watch the Impractical Jokers do a skit version of that, which is...
Oh, really? Okay. Yes. I'll YouTube that for sure.
So my next pick, I have to give like a caveat warning for this. It's from... The movie's from 1999. It stars Matthew Perry and Oliver Platt and Neve Campbell. It's called Three to Tango.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And So I will say a lot of the stereotypes and tropes in the movie, they do not hold up culturally. So like if you are sensitive to that, know that going in, that a lot of those things do not hold up to current cultural norms. But at its time, it was very funny. So the essential premise is Matthew Perry, he falls in love with his boss's mistress. His boss basically pays him to be a chaperone for her because he thinks that he's gay because his business partner is gay as well. So, and then it's basically just your basic rom-com, you know, where the girl thinks the guy is gay, but he is not. And there were a lot of those in the 90s and early 2000s. Okay. And it's a cute movie. And, you know, Matthew Perry, this was at the height of his friend's charm before he sort of, you know, went off the cliff. And it has like peak Oliver Platt. And like, I don't really know why, but Oliver Platt has always been one of my favorite character actors. And whenever he is in something, he gets to do something comedic. I find it hilarious. There's nothing that Oliver Platt does comedically that I don't find funny. And there is just a lot of little Oliver Plattisms in here that I personally love. So if you like that kind of comedy from the late 90s, or if you're an Oliver Platt fan, it's definitely worth checking out.
I mean, who doesn't love Oliver Platt? I remember when this film came out, but I never saw it. Just never got around to it. But I do remember when it came out and Matthew Perry, Neve Campbell coming off Scream. She was a big deal at this point. So you recommend checking it out even all these years later.
Yeah. Like I said, like if you are someone that is like probably 25 now, it's culturally not going to hold up for you. But if you're someone that grew up in the 80s, 90s, I think you'll have a lot of fun with it.
All right, Paige, you're up. What you got for us?
All right. So I have a 2010s film called Something Borrowed. Have you guys heard of it?
Something Borrowed? Is it Brittany Murphy?
No, as Kate Hudson, Jennifer Goodwin. Okay. John Krasinski's in it. He actually plays Jennifer Goodwin's like best friend in it.
Oh, wow.
And then, so pretty much what it's about, though, is so Kate Hudson and Jennifer Goodwin are like best friends, like grew up with each other. And Kate Hudson is getting married to this guy. The actor's name is Colin Egglesfield.
Sure.
I don't know. Handsome dude, though. But Jennifer Goodwin's like in love with him. So it's pretty much just like, but then they start having an affair. But it's a really good rom-com because first and foremost it's about the friendship between Kate Hudson and Jennifer Goodwin, but then the whole situation of the best friend being in love with her best friend's like fiance, but then he's also in love with her, and Kate Hudson's not really even in love with her husband. I mean, well, fiance. So it's like this whole ordeal. It's a really fun movie, though. I think it's highly underrated. It's a great rom-com. I definitely recommend checking it out.
All right. Well, I have actually another comedic film for my next pick. And it's a film I think is really underrated, maybe underseen. And I'm curious to hear if you guys have seen it and are fans of the film. This is a movie directed by Edward Norton, starring Ben Stiller and Edward Norton. And it's called Keeping the Faith. It's a movie. It's a funny movie. Okay. Well, Benny is not a fan. I think this movie really holds up. It's really funny. The girl who stars in the film, who's the love interest, is a girl from Dharma and Greg. I don't remember her name. If you guys remember the sitcom Dharma and Greg, if you don't, understand, totally understandable. But she's the female lead. She's basically two boys and her are best friends when they're kids. And they reunite years later when they're all adults. Ben Stiller is a rabbi in New York, and Edward Norton plays a priest. And they both start to have feelings for her, even though being a rabbi, it's really, you know, frowned upon for him to be with somebody who's not Jewish. And Edward Norton is supposed to be a priest, so he's not even supposed to, you know, be interested in women. But they both have to literally fight those urges and fight those different kind of stereotypes. And it's just really interesting. By putting that religious angle into it, I think it makes it more interesting just than a random, like, love triangle. And the movie is really funny. I think it's hysterical. Ben Stiller has some scenes where he goes on these dates that are like some of the worst dates you'll ever go on with like some of the worst women. And Ben Stiller, this is like when he was like not in his prime, but like he was still making really great comedies. And I think Edward Norton had a really good taste for just the comedic timing and the characters. You buy that these two guys are best friends, even though they're different religions. And they're like these two young hip priests and rabbi. And the way they kind of play with that throughout the community in New York, I think it's a very charming, funny, and heartwarming film. Benny disagrees. What's wrong, Benny? Why don't you like this movie?
So I think I was in seminary when this movie came out. And so that probably characterized it. I was like,
okay,
these guys, they're just all assholes. And so I guess that I don't like romantic comedies or what have you, where I dislike all of the characters because I want all of them to end up unhappy. And this is one of those situations. I dislike all three characters in the movie.
Really? Bette Stiller and Norton, I think, are so charming in this film.
No,
I'm shocked by this.
Yeah, that movie is just not for me. I remember like avidly disliking that movie. Now, I've not went back and revisited it. But like I said, I remember when I saw it, I'd be like, oh my God, I hate this thing.
All right. Well, who knows? Maybe if you saw it today, you'll change your mind. Paige, have you heard of this film? Have you seen it?
I have not, but like the concept like actually seems quite hilarious. So maybe one day I will check this out because it sounds very bonkers and something that I just have to see what it's about.
I'm not saying you're gonna love it, but I promise you it's a good watch. You'll laugh, it's funny. I think it's charming. I think Edward Norton, I think he's only directed a handful of films. I think this is the first film he ever directed and stars in. So I think he just did a really good job. If you like Ben Stiller, this is what I'll say. If you like Ben Stiller comedies, I think you'll find things like in this movie. And I'm not talking like Night at the Museum. I'm talking about his good stuff. So that's my opinion. All right, well, let's finish off with one last film quick. And throw out some honorable mentions if you want. Benny, go ahead. Give us one more and some honorable mentions and we'll move on.
Okay, so this is a weird one to throw out because it literally just got out of theaters, but nobody went and saw it. It's Lisa Frankenstein.
Oh, but, yeah, never saw that.
Yeah, I watched it like last week, man, and I love the movie so much.
And like, there is a love triangle in it.
Yeah, there are two love triangles, mm-hmm. really. But regardless, it's rare that I can watch a movie by myself and just like physically laugh out loud audibly. And I did like three or four times in that movie. It's a horror comedy, but it leans much more into the comedy than it does the horror.
Yeah.
If any one of you are old enough to remember an 80s comedy called Heathers with Christian Slater.
Yes.
Of course.
It has a very similar vibe to Heathers. But I just really enjoyed that movie. No one went and saw it. I believe it's streaming on Peacock right now. So just enjoy it, have some laughs, watch some people die. It's a good time.
Paige, were you a fan of Lisa Frankenstein?
I was, yeah. It's a good time. Like I wanted it to lean more into the horror than it did, but it's fun. I think Catherine Newton, I believe is her name.
Yeah.
I mean, she was just in Abigail. I mean, she's killing it in the horror scene. So I like the horror comedy that she's like gearing herself for. So
awesome. Benny, any honorable mentions, or is that going to do it for you?
I'll throw out the 80s classic Back to School. I was trying to stay away from 80s movies, but you know, Thornton Mellon, Philip the Professor, and I can't remember the female professor's name, but one of the all-time great movies. Just watched it the other day. Still holds up. Still Robert Downey Jr.'s best role.
Wow, okay. Paige, one last film. Any honorable mentions? What you got?
I mean, come on, guys. I got to go with The Notebook. I mean, it's the ultimate, like, romance movie. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, then you shouldn't even be listening to this podcast because what are you doing with your life? Go be some lovey-dovey. I remember the first time I saw that movie. I think I was in, like, eighth grade, and I, like, just had my first breakup. And I, like, cried watching it. And I was like, I just want a man like this. Like, because if you're a bird, I'm a bird. Like, great movie. I don't care what anyone says. Go check that out.
Every girl wants a Ryan Gosling. What can you say?
Exactly. And he's still around, baby. So definitely The Notebook. I mean, it's definitely geared more to just to Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams relationship. But you do have James Madsen in the mix with it towards the latter half of the film. But another one, I mean, I would definitely say like My Best Friend's Wedding and She's the Man.
Love that movie.
Rub some dare in it, baby. I love that movie.
The movie from 1988?
No, the one with Amanda Bynes.
Oh, I'm thinking of just one of the guys. Never mind. Very different movie.
Yeah.
The superior film, Benny. I watched She's the Man and Just One of the Guys back to back about 3 weeks ago. It was yeah, it was interesting.
Double feature. Both,
I'll say Just One of the Guys still holds up pretty well. I mean, obviously some of it is dated.
She plays football in that movie, right?
No, she's not even, she's trying to be a journalist, and she doesn't think she'd be taken seriously as a man, as a woman. So she goes in our high school as a man to try to join a contest for her to become a journalist. Football.
I don't know what movie
she's I'm like, what sport is it? There is a soccer movie. And she's the man.
Yeah, well, yeah, I know that. Well, in Europe, they call it football. But yes. No, there is an 80s movie with a woman that dresses up. And it's not
as a man.
Yes, to play like football or something.
Well, there's Little Giants.
Yeah, not there's that. Ladybugs.
Ladybugs is soccer. Yep.
I don't think it's that. It's not Boys Don't Cry, because that movie. Nope. Not. Yeah. No.
Huh. I can't think. Little Giants is a female football player in that one.
Maybe I'm just making shit up in my mind. But
you could be. Hey, you know what? Let's make the movie, though. Let's go ahead and put our resources together. All right, I'll give you one last film, and I think this is a generally great film. It's one of my favorite films when it comes to romantic comedies, and it has a really great kind of love triangle. I'm talking about James L. Brooks' Broadcast News with Holly Hunter, William Hurt, rest in peace, and the always great Albert Brooks. Just a great, great film. One of my favorite comedies of the 80s. I just got the Criterion Blu-ray not too long ago. It looks fantastic. Albert Brooks should have won Best Supporting Actor that year for that role, and he lost to somebody else. I can't remember who, but I guarantee you it probably should have been Albert Brooks. It's just one of his best performances. So yeah, if you haven't seen Broadcast News, highly recommend checking it out. Great love triangle in there, but it's very funny, very touching. And it's the movie that made Holly Hunter, you know, a household name. Like, she was nominated for an Oscar. This was her first, like, big film. And she went on to make many other great films after this. So Broadcast News, check it out. And if I'm sticking with comedies, I'll throw Just Friends on there also.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Ryan Reynolds. Yes. The guy from American Pie. His name's Chris something. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. Chris Klein, there you go. I knew it wasn't Chris Evans or Chris Pine. It was Chris Klein. So, yeah, I like Just Friends. I think it's a underrated, you know, zany comedy. It's a Christmas movie. Ryan Reynolds is hysterical in it. Amy Smart. Great little love triangle there, but none of that movie is played seriously. It is all for jokes.
Amy Smart, man. What happened to her?
Well, I don't know. She hasn't been around in a while. She did Road Trip.
She did Butterfly Effect, and everything went downhill from there.
That's right. Yeah.
Rat Race was so good.
I love Rat Race. Yes. All right, guys. Well, that's going to do it for this segment. We talked about our favorite films with love triangles. Moose wasn't here, so I wonder what he would have said, but maybe we'll hit him up for a couple next week. All right. We're going to talk about Challengers next after this break. We're going to do a quick review, get into spoilers, and talk about this film that is it's interesting. I can't wait to dive into it with you guys. All right, we'll be back after these messages.
Three best friends. One became a priest. One a rabbi. And the other has a confession to make.
I'm in love with Jake.
Ben Stiller, Edward Norton, Jenna Elfman. Keeping the faith.
Immensier oi.
Rated PG-13. Special sneak preview this Saturday.
Japanese are expecting a war.
Hostilities imminent.
We'll have no shield against invasion.
We have to strike the heart of Japan the way they have hit us.
Harbor, rated PG-13, starts Friday, May 25th.
From the producer and the director of Fatal Attraction.
Suppose I were to offer you $1 million for one night with your wife.
A provocative offer.
David, I think you want me to do it.
An irresistible seduction.
You might enjoy it.
Don't bet on it.
An indecent proposal.
It was just sex, not love, just sex.
Robert Redford, Demi Moore, Woody Harrelson. Indecent Proposal, rated R, starts Wednesday, April 7th.
Welcome back to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast, here with our main review, and today we are talking about the new film, Challenger, starring Zendaya and the other two guys whose names I cannot remember. Paige, help me out here. Do you remember their guys' names?
Josh O'Connor and his name is Mike Fast.
Thank you so much, Paige, for the assist. I should do my homework more often. All right, guys, we're talking about Challengers, directed by Legolas Lugadoogie.
Luca Guadagnino.
There you go. You got it. Paige with another assist coming in. This is a movie that I feel like was talked about quite a bit because it was delayed due to the writer's strike. It was supposed to come out last fall. Very, you know, sexy, stylized trailer. I think a lot of people were excited for this. Excited to see Zendaya in a more adult kind of role. Euphoria, she's playing a high school kid. You know, you see Spider-Man. In Dune, she's like a warrior. But this was something new for her, I feel like. This was something to see her in a different kind of light. I mean, this is not a spoiler, but she does have a kid in this movie. Seeing Zendaya as a mom was not something I thought I would see any time recently, but it's in here. So let's start with Paige, since you're our guest. What were your overall thoughts on the new film, Challengers? Non-spoiler, just general thoughts, and then we'll really dive into spoilers afterwards.
I mean, I think Luca Guadagnino served us up an ace of a movie. I think this is one of his best films to date. It's his most mainstream film, I will say. I think it definitely will hit across like all audiences pretty well. I don't think it's as sexy as the trailers make it out to be, but man, this film is very like fierce and like tense on and off the court. Whether it be like, I don't want to say in the bedroom because it's not that really many sex scenes, but it is sexy, I will say, and very sweaty. But no, I thought the performances were great. The score is electrifying. Like, I loved it. It's very techno-y, which I thought was great. Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. That was one of the, I think, most unique scores I've ever, like, given us. And I loved it. I was, like, bobbing my head, like, throughout the entire movie. And I thought the way the film is told is through, it's, like, it's non-linear. So it's, like, going from present day to past to a week before, like the future. Like, I really liked how that worked because you got a sense of how these characters have come to be and who they are and why they are the way they are. But man, yeah, I mean, this is a very character driven film, but with the backdrop of tennis being at the forefront of it all. I thought it was shot phenomenally. I thought the performances were great first and foremost. And yeah, I actually think the writing was really, like, really spectacular. I wonder if this did come out last year, what this could have entailed for possibly, like, best original screenplay, because the Justin Horowitz, I believe, is the guy that wrote the screenplay for this, and his wife is Celine Song, who wrote and directed Past Lives. So, I mean, they've got a talented household over there. So I would have been very curious if they actually were both up for, like, Best Original Screenplay last year. But, yeah, no, I think this film is phenomenal. And I'm glad it got number one at the box office. I hope it has legs because this movie needs to be seen. It is definitely my second favorite film of the year thus far. And they both star Zendaya.
Oh, yeah, some Dune 2 love. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thanks for your opening thoughts there. Benny, can't wait to hear what you thought of Challengers. Hit us, buddy.
I was super excited that Paige is going to be our guest this week. Not many people know this, but Paige is my movie bizarro friend. So, like, she has the exact opposite taste in movies than me, like, almost universally. And this is another case where it hit perfectly like that. So I was, like, reading this article in Deadline where they were, like, breaking down, like, you know, Challengers cinema scores based on, like, age and region. And, like, the lowest scores that it got were, like, males over 40 in the Midwest. And I'm like, yep, that tracks. I hate this movie so much. And so I shouldn't say I hate it. There are parts of the movie that are really good, like, the movie is well acted. The movie looks really good. The time jumps, I thought, helped the movie. I did think they did it too many times. So occasionally, like, I thought it slowed down the narrative a little bit. But I would say, a lot like when I was talking about, like, in the last segment, I don't enjoy romantic movies where I do not like any of the characters. And all three of these characters are inherently dislikable to me. Like none of them have redeeming qualities. So I shouldn't say that the movie is bad. The movie is not bad, but there's no combination of anything that was going to happen to these three people where I would care one way or another. So they did a good job of drawing you into these people's lives, letting you spend time with these people. And so I think the director did a really good job of letting you know this is who these people are, this is what their dysfunction together is and how it works. But in the end, just as me as a person, I don't gravitate towards movies like that. So I didn't enjoy the movie, even though it was well made. I guess it does that make any sense what I'm saying?
You respect it more than you enjoy it.
Yeah, the movie is well crafted. I just didn't get a lot of enjoyment out of it. Mm-hmm. And I would say it's a lot like Denis Villeneuve's old movies. They're beautifully done. They're just not for me. And this is a movie that's very well done, but it's not ever going to be for me. And then, like, I'll go off about the ending, you know, later on when we're in spoilers. But those are my initial thoughts.
Yeah, it's very interesting to hear both of you guys, you know, different perspectives. But I think it's fascinating that, Benny, even though you don't like the film, you could totally say it was well made, well shot, well acted. So I agree with all those things. I really enjoyed the film overall. I think the actors all bring their A game, and I think they're all very charming. And the relationship between those three is very interesting, and almost more so between the two guys. While Zendaya is like she's the face of the movie poster. I think the more interesting story is what's going on with these two guys and what's kind of underneath of everything that's not said and what is kind of happening underneath of what isn't being said. And Zendaya is kind of, you know, this real tough, not strong-willed, confident athlete who's put in this really weird situation. And I thought the two actors, especially Josh O'Connor, I thought he was kind of the highlight of this movie for me. I thought he is so charming, the way he carries himself. And I thought his relationship with the other guy, the guy from West Side Story. I thought those two, their relationship was so interesting and their interplay with each other was so much fun. I thought Zendaya was really good in this also, but to me, like, her story wasn't as interesting as the two guys. And I think in a lot of ways that mirrors what happens in the movie. She is, like, stuck between these two guys who have a really complicated relationship. And I did kind of like how the movie jumped back and forth because I was like, wait, why are they at this point? And the movie takes its time to reveal the history, the past, and what happened between these three individuals. And I thought that was interesting setting up in that way because you see something and you're like, whoa, wait a minute. What did I miss? And then you're kind of locked into the story because you want to see what led to where they're at throughout this movie. I do think the third act is a little messy. I think it loses its focus a little bit, and it wasn't as satisfying for me as I was hoping it would be. Because I would say halfway through the movie, I was like, this is a great movie. I was like, this is going to be one of the better films of the year. And by the end, I couldn't help but feel not let down, but a little unfulfilled by the ending. Now, I've only seen this movie once, and this is something, if I see it again, my opinion could change. Because now, you know, the first time you watch a movie, you're just taking it in. You don't know what the director is saying. You're figuring out as it goes along. And the ending, you know, is supposed to put everything together. And really, what he's trying to say with this movie, I think, happens in the last 10 minutes of this film, without getting into spoilers. So it is something I'm looking forward to re-examining on a rewatch. But I will say, I think it's a really good movie. I agree with Paige. I think the soundtrack's fantastic. I think all the acting's great. I think some of the camera work in this is fantastic. I think he's directing the hell out of this movie at times. I think the actor's charisma really carries the film. But I do think it falls apart a little bit in the end. So to me, it's still a positive review. I just need more time. I feel like this is a movie, like I said, if I watch again, I'll have a better grasp of that ending. Mm-hmm. If it worked for me. But leaving the theater, I didn't feel like it worked as well. So that's my overall thoughts. I'm definitely more in a positive. I'm looking forward to talk to Benny here in spoilers because, Benny, you really want to get into the ending. I think it sounds like you really did not like the way this movie ended. And while I have mixed emotions on it, it sounds like, Paige, you like the ending, correct?
Yeah, I think it's very metaphoric in a sense because in the beginning of the movie, you have Zendaya's character saying, like you don't love tennis because tennis is like a relationship. It's you having a relationship with your opponent. What we get at what?
Yeah. So let's just say right here, we're going to go right into spoilers. Mm-hmm. We got our general thoughts out. And I think what you're about to say, Paige, is definitely what I want to talk about also. So yes, set that up again. The ending, she says what in the beginning and how's that play into the end?
So in the beginning of the film, when they the two boys first like meet her in a sense, she like says to them, like, you guys, like, you guys don't understand tennis. Like, you guys actually don't love tennis because it's about crafting a relationship with your opponent. Like, when you feel that moment, that's what tennis is. Tennis is a relationship. So tennis and like being in love is like this whole like metaphor thing that they're going back and forth with this entire, like, that's the theme of the movie, is that these two things are one in a sense. And so at the end of the movie, you get the two male characters are actually, they like the game for two different reasons. And at the end, you see them falling in love and being in a relationship on the court with, they're going back and forth. Like, and that's why at the end of the movie, you hear Zendaya scream like excitement, is because she just brought the best out of these two guys. And that's what I found most fascinating about this whole movie, because the whole movie is pretty much, Zendaya is pretty much the sun, and the two boys are the one, like, planets orbiting the sun around her. And once they see her, they're just like so attracted to her, but they're like, and she's attracted to them for so many different reasons. Like, Mike Fast's character is just like, wants to be with her because he knows that she can make him better. And Josh O'Connor wants to be with her because she's just like this feisty next best thing. And he's just like this like playboy that knows he's good at tennis, but he doesn't need her for that. But she likes that he doesn't need her, but she likes that Mike Fast does need her. So yeah. I really like these like back and forth relationship, but kind of like what you said, JTE, is the film is more about the relationship between the boys, but she is just like the centerfold of it that is like standing in the way of their relationship. Just like I almost said a fence, but what is that thing called in the tennis court?
The net.
The net. She is the net standing in between these two guys.
Yeah, so I really want to get to what Benny did like about the ending, but I'll just say this. The ending reminded me of the film Whiplash a little bit.
Yes.
The last scene between Miles Teller and the teacher, and it's like, it's no longer about their feud or what they're going against each other. It becomes about the music. At the end of this movie, it becomes about the tennis and them having this moment going back and forth where, again, Zendaya sets it up at the end. I want to get a little bit more into the relationship stuff that happens before that match, because I do think that last match is pretty interesting, and I think it does come to fruition. But I think where it got kind of messy was everything before that. The hotel, the meeting in the car during the hurricane, the back and forth between her and the other guy, and all that stuff. But Benny, what really didn't work for you in this third act and the ending? Because I'm really curious to hear what you have to say.
So, in general, one of my pet peeves in movies, and this happens more with dramas than any other genre of movie, it's at the end of the movie where someone is sitting on a bench just looking forlorn into the distance, and they don't really have an ending to the movie other than the person, you know, looking forlorn, or someone is at a crossroads and you don't know which one they're going to take, and the movie ends. Like, my general feeling is, if I'm going to invest 2 hours of my life into your story, you have to finish your story. That's the covenant we make with one another. And I don't feel that they closed off the story. They closed off one facet of it. But there was a lot more to that story, and they didn't end it. And this is not a movie that's going to have a sequel. Like, I don't want to do your work for you. I don't want to write the next hour of this movie in my head and play it through, because it's not going to have the same tone, and the characters are not going to be doing the same things you are having them do. Like, when I was talking about, like, okay, this movie is not for me. So if I write the next hour of this movie, it's going to be for me. And it's not going to look like what the director's vision, these characters' visions were. It's going to be some, like, whacked out comedy from the 80s. And that's not what this is. So you needed to finish that movie. So, like, I don't care if the two guys, if they ran up and they decide that they're in love, fuck Zendaya. I don't care if, like, okay, we're free now. We're going to be friends. We're going about our way. I don't care if we're going to be our throuple. You need to tie up that thread. I've given you too much time for you not to. And I couldn't stand that they just left that all up in the air for you to decide. Like, as far as, like, the friendship thing, I got that they had this great release and they were finally playing tennis like they meant to, even though no one was watching. And I got that, the little hand symbol, that meant that, okay, they finally let go of the sexual relationship being the thing that's going to divide them. All that's fine and good, but you needed to close up those other things. I can't take it when movies do that. It drives me nuts.
So what aspect of the story did you feel like really didn't have a closure?
I just wanted to know what is going to happen with these three people as a couple. I wanted to know if the three of them are going to be together, if the two guys are going to be together, or what. I just needed that to be finished for the story to end. And I just thought that closed off like 1/5 of the story. I don't know. That's how I felt.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Paige, what was your reading on the ending? Do you feel like it closed everything or tidy everything up in a bow?
Personally, I kind of like endings like this sometimes because it's up for your interpretation. From my interpretation of it was that pretty much like Zendaya she felt she was proud. She was like a proud mama bear. She was like, I brought the best out in these boys. And I think the guys realized that they needed that. Cause she literally told Mike Fast, like, I will leave you if you lose tomorrow. And then she was telling Josh O'Connor's character, like I'll sleep with you if you lose this match. Like, so she's like playing both sides of the thing. But I think at the end, the boys fall in love, like back with each other, whether it be a platonic relationship or they're kind of in. Honestly, my interpretation is that at the end, the three of them will kind of be like in an open relationship with each other.
A throuple.
Yeah, like a throuple, pretty much. Like that's kind of my interpretation because in a sense it's kind of like a game with them. Because even when one of them was dating the other, like they liked knowing the different aspects of what was going on, like, or trying to get in the way of the relationship, but they didn't view it as like, you're stealing my girl. Like they liked, I don't know, they like got off of like interfering with each other kind of in a sense. And so that's kind of my sense is that the two boys fell back in love with each other, but they also fell in love with like the game in a sense, because it brought them together. So, I mean, it would be funny if actually they went dot, dot, dot 20 years later and it's the two guys together and Zendaya's like on the street, like as they're walking by.
Like if they did that, like I would have been like, this movie's great. I loved it.
You just wanted it to end, like have a solid like book cover end. You didn't want it to be. I liked it that it leaves it up to your interpretation, because what I think is it's just in that moment that she brought out the best in them and they both fell in love not only with the game but back with each other.
And I agree with you. I'm just saying in my interpretation, I'm never going to get to where those characters would really go. And that bugs me because I can't do that.
Could it be like the point wasn't really the relationship at the end? It feels like the director doesn't care about the relationship in the very last few moments of this film. Is it just about the tennis? Is it just about what these guys are able to achieve or kind of overcome?
I don't think the movie was ever about tennis.
Yeah, I don't think. Yeah, I think it was more or less about the relationship than tennis. Tennis was used as the backdrop, as like the metaphor of the whole relationship thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think it's at the forefront. I think it's the relationship between these two guys and how this one girl like interfered with it all in a sense, but also brought them together. Like, it's weird. I don't know how to like, I don't know if I'm like, saying if you guys understand what I'm saying, but yeah, like she was like the driving force of tearing them apart but also bringing them together.
What I also don't understand is Josh O'Connor in the movie, they get in an argument and he doesn't come to her match where she gets hurt and she breaks her knee, and for some reason that was like the cause of the rift between her and him. I mean, why else did, like, after that we jump forward and she's with this other guy? No, obviously he was there at the match and he was there with her when he got hurt. So, but is that enough for to dump this guy that she's already with?
No. Well, they got in that fight because when they're like about to like hook up, she's talking about tennis and he literally says, can we talk about something else? That's all she cares about at the end of the day. That's all Zendaya's character cares about is tennis. So, and then when she gets hurt, she has to live it through someone else. And Mike Fast's character is all about like, I'm so mesmerized by you. Like, I want to be just like you pretty much. Like, train me. And she feeds off of that.
But so I think it is about the tennis.
In a sense, yes, it is. It is. But at the same time, for Zendaya, it's about the tennis. I don't think it's about the tennis for the boys.
For the boys, yes. Yeah. And, you know, watching this movie, it's so, you know, I'm watching it and I'm like, in a lot of ways, she is kind of like a bystander who is trying to pull the strings from these two guys.
Exactly.
I mean, the guys, you know, the scene where it looks like we might get a threesome, and then it was just her again manipulating them to start making out.
Yep.
And that's why. So let me ask you this. So before the match, the whole thing she was doing about going, you know, sleeping with Josh O'Connor in the car, telling him, "I'll sleep with you if you lose," he needs the confidence. That is where the movie to me felt like it was a little messy. And I was like, wow, this movie, I feel like could have been cut down a little bit. I feel like I understand where she's coming from and what she's trying to do. And that's where the movie to me felt like, I was like, oh man, this is still going. Like, let's get to the tennis. Part of me just wanted to get to this tennis match. And I was actually kind of hoping it would go to I thought this was a qualifier. I thought maybe that match would end towards the second half of the movie. And then we were going to get into like the US Open and like Wimbledon. I was like, oh, wow, I'm excited to see both these guys in like almost like a sports tournament type movie. Like, I wanted them both to go to like, you know, Wimbledon and be in different brackets. And like, I felt like there was a great buildup for these two guys to play each other. I just didn't know it was only going to be at this like smaller event that he just happened to be going to. Cause she's like, you need to go kick some guys' asses because we need to get you back, your confidence back up. I kind of wish it went to that next level of like a crazy tournament in Wimbledon or something like even bigger, but maybe that would have made the budget a lot bigger also.
I felt during the movie that Zendaya was set up pretty clearly as the villain in the whole movie.
In some ways, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And so I think that's specifically why they're at this tournament, is because she knew she could put these guys together and then manipulate both of them.
Well, she does say that at some point in the movie that, like, Mike Fass's art.
She calls her out.
Yeah, Art thinks I did this, pretty much. Set the follow-up. I think she knew possibly that oh my God, why can't I think of the other character? Josh O'Connor's character. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. I think she knew he possibly could have been there, but she does say to him, like, you never make it past like the second round, because he just doesn't care as much. He's a phenomenal tennis player, but he doesn't care to push himself to the next level. So I don't think she actually thought he would like even get to that point. But I like that it's at a smaller venue because it makes it more intimate. And that's what the movie is about this intimate relationship between these three characters that, honestly, the three of them are all pieces of shit at the end of the day. Like, they really are. And I think that's what I like more about it, is that in the beginning, you kind of are rooting like, ooh, I'm rooting for this guy. Ooh, I'm rooting for this guy. But then you while it's going back and forth with different, like, the time periods and stuff, they're like, all three of them are kind of all suck, actually, in their own way.
Yeah, that's interesting. They're not all super likable. They're all very complicated people. They're not. There's no real black or white in this movie. All the characters kind of live in the gray area, which I think makes for more interesting characters at the end of the day.
Same.
Let's go ahead and give our final thoughts on the film, because I think we really got into the ending. And before we get the final thoughts, is there any scenes that really stood out to you? I'll just say for me, that threesome scene was really like, pretty much like, what's going to happen here? How far is this going to go? Mm-hmm. And for her to end it with them kissing each other. Also, I'll say the tennis matches are shot very interesting camera angles. There's the camera shot where it's basically the POV of the tennis ball. The use of slow motion at times, like, he really milks the cinematic tools that he can to make that tennis match pretty interesting. I also like the whole callback of holding the ball in the middle of the racket.
That's my favorite thing in the entire movie, is at the end when he holds the ball in the middle of the racket, because he's telling him without telling him, because it's a callback to the beginning of the movie.
Exactly.
So I love that. Was honestly probably my favorite scene. And yeah, the threesome scene is definitely, it's up there. I mean, it's a stellar scene because it's the starting point of her being this manipulative person in a sense, and getting in the way of these people. Even though she says she doesn't want to be a homewrecker, she knows exactly what she's doing, because at the end of the day, she only cares about herself, and she's going to do whatever it takes to get herself to the next like platform and better and stuff. The only scene I did not like is the point of view of being the ball going back.
Really? Okay.
Thank God it was only for like 2 seconds, because I wasn't the biggest fan of that. But I will say the tennis scenes are shot phenomenally. I'm not a tennis person at all. Literally after this movie, though, I was like, shit, I kind of want to go play tennis. Like, these people look awesome playing tennis right now. Like,
yeah, I'll say this. You know, this movie's not subtle. It's so obvious these two guys are in love with each other. Like the churro scene
has been
hitting. I'm seeing it all over social media. Mm-hmm. You're watching that scene in the theater and you're just like, these guys basically are waiting to make out with each other.
And if you guys notice too, in the beginning with the threesome scene, the two beds are already pushed together.
Oh, interesting.
Because she's sitting right in the middle and she would have fallen right through, but those beds were already pushed together. So
whole story about masturbation and mm-hmm. I mean, the movie's not subtle with what's going on there. But that's okay. I think sometimes movies.
But it is subtle though too. At the same time, because it's not giving you the entire like you want to just know, but you it's not letting you know. You have to like think for yourself. Yeah. Like, ooh, are they or aren't they? And I found that fascinating because it's like, it can go one way or the other, but it's up for you to decide which way you want it to navigate. In a sense,
good point, Benny. Any scene that you really enjoyed, or was there any scene in particular you really disliked?
So the only. Other than the ending, which I've already kind of given my thoughts on, the only scene that I did not like is during the tennis match where they shot it from the ground up.
Oh, like the ball bouncing. Yeah, I see. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah, where it made the court look clear. Mm-hmm. I just do not like video game shots like that where they shoot from either underneath or over top. I just, in any kind of movie action otherwise, I'm just not a big fan of those kind of shot setups. But I will say my favorite scene is actually when he's in the hotel trying to con the woman out of her room.
Oh, yeah.
So just to me, that was the biggest laugh in the movie. And like I said, it's a well-constructed movie. You know, it's just not something that's designed for me.
All right, yeah, let's give our closing thoughts. I'll start and then we'll go around. I think this is a really well-acted, well-directed film. And I think the three leads are all fantastic. And if you have a great directed film, and all your three leads are, you know, hitting it out of the park, you got a good movie. Even though I have some issues with the third act, I think it might be a little too long, a little messy at the end. I also like the Whiplash-esque ending where it kind of comes to this moment of something bigger than, you know, what's actually happening. And again, it's about the tennis, but not really about the tennis, but it's about this moment of these two characters interlocked in this moment where they truly connect through this sport. And I think the movie, to me, I think Josh O'Connor is the real standout in this movie. Again, I think Zendaya does good. It's something different for her. I think Feast, you know, the guy from West Side Story, is really good too. But Josh O'Connor was the one I walked out saying, damn, I'd love to see this guy in some more movies. I think he was so charismatic. I just thought he was great. To me, he was the standout in this movie. And I can't wait to see what he does next. And who knows, it'll be a big franchise film or maybe it'll be an indie film. Who knows, but I'll be there. I think he's a great actor. And he's somebody, you know, who's up and coming. I think this movie will put him a little bit on the map, at least for the, you know, the cinephiles out there. So overall, I think this is a good movie. I think it's something that people will go back and watch because of the performances, because of the chemistry between all these leads. And I think that's, you know, I like movies way worse for much less. So overall, I think if you like the trailer for this movie, I think you'll enjoy the film. Paige, let's go. Final thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, kind of to like piggyback off you said, like, I do think Luca Guadagnino gave us his most mainstream film to date. And I really do think this film will have like rewatchability and be able to like resonate with people like 20 years from now. I think people will still be watching this movie and find it really quite fascinating because it really is like an exquisite like character study on three unlikable characters. But at the same time, you're also like rooting for these horrible people in a sense. So I found that really fascinating with the backdrop of tennis. But yeah, it's a character study on passion and desire, first and foremost, whether it be about someone like being in a love and relationship or about like a sport that you are dedicated to. And I really found that fascinating. And not to mention, like, we already said it though, but like the score is just like offbeat and very like electric, and to me I found the framework really like satisfying. I thought it was really like clever frames, and the way the film was shot was just really stunning, and the editing I think was also pretty phenomenal as well. Overall though, I mean, this movie is like gleaming with energy from start to finish. Like it's like pulse pounding, like tension throughout, whether it be on and off the court. And I think it literally feels, the best way to describe it is the movie feels like you're watching tennis. You're going back, your head's turning back and forth the entire time. You're like, ooh, like this is happening. Like it, that's literally the tension of how I felt throughout the movie. And I really dug that.
Nice. Benny, overall thoughts?
So it's a well-made movie. I think if you're somebody that generally, like when they announce like the Oscar nominations, if you go down like all 10 of those movies and you're like, yes, this is my stuff, you're going to really enjoy this movie. It is sort of like a mainstream art housey movie. And if that's your vibe, you're really going to dig it. And like I said, it's very well made. That's just not my cup of tea. There is one thing I did forget to mention is there's like a little back and forth the two guys have while they're in a steam room. Mm-hmm. And they both get the guy, like give a little monologue. That's a great scene. That's the best scene of the movie. Mm-hmm. And I forgot to mention that. I did want to give a shout out because they both did a great job in that scene. But in the end, it's one of those things. If you like sort of that art house indie feel, but a little more mainstream, you're really going to dig this a lot. If you're like me, you know, and that's not your cup of tea, maybe pass it and watch the classic 80s tennis movie Jocks instead, and you'll probably get a little more out of that.
Yeah, I think that pretty much says it. If you like a horny film with a lot of great acting, a lot of great directing, Challengers is for you. All right, guys, that's going to do it for this episode of the Extra Movie Butter podcast. I want to thank Paige so much for filling in for Moose and not just being here for the review, but being here for the whole episode. Paige, do us a favor, plug your Twitter, your show, your page, whatever you want to.
No pun intended with that.
Yeah, Paige.
Yeah, no, well, honestly, thank you guys for having me on. This was a blast. I got to take care of my two white boys in it. So I felt very honored to talk Challengers with you guys. I love that we all had different opinions on the film. Just makes it that much more funner. And I hope to come back soon. But until then, guys, everyone go check me out on Instagram and Twitter at FrontPageNews9. You can also go check out the website I write for. And you can follow us on all social media. It is a bite-sized breakdown. I write film reviews there. You can actually see my Challengers review there. We also do top fives, long format articles, all that fun jazz. And we also have a new YouTube show called The Bite-Sized Breakdown, where we talk movie news and TV news and all fun things entertainment. So please go over to our YouTube channel and subscribe there as well. And on that, thank you, boys.
Awesome. Benny, anything you want to say or plug? What's going on with the YouTube channel?
Me and Moose haven't been doing it, but DJ, another friend of ours, David Jandoy, and he's doing a show on there called Cinemojis. If you like Pictionary or movie trivia, you definitely should check it out. It's the Last American Heroes YouTube channel. And definitely check out Paige's The Bite-Sized Breakdown. Like, you know, you always have your friends on and you always say like, yeah, go check out their stuff. But then you yourself don't actually go and watch it. But I actually do read Bite-Sized Breakdown stuff. It's really excellent. So definitely check out their website. I really do enjoy their reviews.
Yeah. And you'll catch me and Paige on Cinemojis in a couple weeks. We just had a match recently. It was filmed. It's in the can. Can't say who won, but it was quite the barn burner, if I will say so for myself. Mm-hmm. All right, well, that's going to do it, guys. Benny, thanks so much for being on the show, as usual. Paige, thanks so much for filling in for Moose. You'll be on again. You're one of our go-to critics on here. And, yeah, also, you know, definitely check out her reviews on Bite Size Breakdown. I check them out all the time also. I know a lot of the guys on that page, but I'll definitely go there for Paige's reviews because we have pretty similar tastes for the most part, so especially when it comes to certain genres. I would love to do, like, just an all-horror Cinemojis episode with you one day. Maybe we'll
have
to do that.
Let's make it happen.
Let's make it happen. I would like
you're
to do
calling
that.
Me out right now on your own platform. Let's do it then.
Let's do it. Benny, make it happen, Benny.
I'll message DJ tonight.
Thank you. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening. Check out us next week. We'll be reviewing The Fall Guy. We might have the episode out a day or two later. We're waiting for Moose to get back from his trip. Want to make sure he has time to see the movie. This is a big film. It's the first film of the summer. Ryan Gosling coming off Barbie. He's hotter than ever. He's hot right now. That's what they would say in, you know, Hollywood. I mean, he's just hot always. I mean, he's Ryan Gosling. So really excited for that movie. I think it's supposed to be like a throwback to like 80s kind of action romantic films. It's based on a TV series. David Leitch comes from stunt work. So I think this is his love letter to the art of stuntmen. But the word of mouth on this is pretty pretty great overall. Everyone I know has seen it has just pretty much sung its praises. Benny, are you excited for Fall Guy?
I am excited for Fall Guy. I like Ryan Gosling. I like Emily Blunt. I like 80s action. So this is heading right down my alley.
Awesome. All right, guys. Once again, thanks so much for listening. Keep watching those movies and have a good week.
Good night, Wimbledon.